As a sculptor, you have to worry about people breaking their necks climbing things. The environment in Storm King is such that people respect sculptures sitting here, I believe, as works of art. One of the things, the attributes of making sculpture out of forces, out of cable and steel tubes, is that they can be made very, very large. You don't have to have an engineer solve the problem of what's going to make it stand up, because that's what the whole story is. It's being, it's enabling itself to be there, given its form, because of the forces. So it's very inviting to make a piece big like Free Ride Home. And the moment that you do, it's not in a scale that you can identify it as, say, of a personage, which many sculptures sort of human size or giant human size are. You confront them almost as if it were another human being there, or a creature. When you get to a scale like Free Ride Home, you're dealing with something which is an environment in itself, and you walk into this surrounding world of structure. And so how you experience that, that's a question that interests me a great deal when I'm working on these pieces. It's very much akin to the experience of the child building a model airplane, walking into this world in miniature and trying to imagine how it's going to be, walking through that fuselage if you were the size of an ant. And so looking for the experience of scale is something that's very, very exciting, very important, and the arching over you of this Free Ride Home is such an experience for me. I had my first gallery show in 66, and it was I was an overnight success. No, people admired these works because they hadn't seen any such thing before, and I was in all sorts of group shows suddenly, and one of the shows that was a big time show at this moment was in Arnhem, Holland, called Sonsbeck 1971, or something, Sonsbeck 71. And they sent me photographs of places that were available. One place that was particularly beautiful was a pond, which must have been 100 yards long and 60, 50 yards wide, something like that, and reflection pool, really, a little lake. And I imagined doing a cantilevered piece over this water. Cantilever is, you know, like an arm reaching out. And so I made a model and built this piece, which was 100 feet long and 20 feet wide, maybe something like this. And it reached out over the water, and it was very beautiful. It reflected the light, mirror reflection. But after the show was over, it was just a summer show. It was a group exhibition. The piece came back in pieces, because it took it apart, and then it languished in my basement for about 3 years until I had an opportunity to show at Waterside Plaza in 74. And I didn't have enough big sculpture for that plaza. There were a few pieces sitting around, but it had occurred to me that the parts from Easy K could be reused and made into a different piece that was appropriate for that plaza on 25th Street. So I made a model of it out of parts which were identical in scale, in relationship to those that were used in Easy K. And out came this piece, Free Ride Home, which was first shown there. And then the people at Storm King saw it, and it was they bought it for this site. And I put it up here, I believe, in 75. When I thought of using those parts again, that form wouldn't have worked at all in that concrete plaza. And so I thought of something that was sort of cathedral-like, arch-like, that would you could walk under and look up to, something that sat on three points, three legs, independent, and I worked it out in that way, three arches all joined from a central core, the arms growing out from that center, And it had a dynamic visually that sort of leaped down across in this arch. And the name Free Ride Home came out of a search from a source that I very often use, which is the names of racehorses. Very often I use this as a sort of Ouija board source for words that don't have any particular meaning, and yet what I try to draw from it is a sort of poetic reference to something having to do with that constellation of parts which are there in the sculpture. What's clear about this kind of structure made of tension forces and compression forces, they're in a contest with one another, and they're resolving themselves into a closed system of forces. So it's a performance of actual physical forces, and I think that people instinctively understand what that's doing, what it's saying, what it's expressing in the way of structure, in the same way that people experience things of the physical world which are rather remarkable, such as a bird in flight or a gazelle running or a lion chasing another animal. You look at it in kind of wonder because of the physical performance that it represents, or that it is, rather. And I think that people instinctively respond to these pieces the way that they do a remarkable physical performance. It's like dance, it's like an athletic event, it's like parts glued together in an architectonic form where you don't know or don't care much what makes it stand up, what makes it be there, because you can imagine it's just being a pile of stones that give that form. People understand instinctively, looking at these sculptures, that it's something very special in physical terms. There are only two kinds of pure forces in nature, those which tend to pull things together and those which tend to push things apart. Everything else is a combination of those. You can do those forces with the electrical force, with the mechanical force that exists in this scale, human scale, or gravity in a bigger scale, but it's only two kinds of forces. And so this is a purest expression on a mechanical level, that is a world human being size structure that you can have, because you're isolating those two kinds of forces, and those themselves make this piece stand up. People often talk about these sculptures, I think erroneously, as gravity-defying, because it isn't they're defying gravity. They're certainly happily living in the realm of gravity, but the forces involved, the physical forces, are really closed within that piece. That is, you can put this piece in orbit around the Earth and it would retain its form quite easily, and it's more the work of physical forces than it is of gravity. I think that this appreciation of the dynamics of a performance, of the performance of a bird in space or a kangaroo leaping, it interests us because we understand it. We understand that experience, and we appreciate an exquisite performance on an athletic field because we sort of measure instinctively, could I do that? Could I run that fast? Could I leap that far? And there is a marriage of all physical experiences with what goes on inside of us instantly, I believe. I think that there's a kind of aesthetic which really doesn't have a name. It isn't defined very well in the literature of art, and it has to do with the dynamics of real forces. I mean, analogous expressions are often found, movement, forces, and so forth in art, that there are only certain ways that forces can work, can happen, can be used in wherever you go in the universe. And there's an extraordinarily large world where forces are at work with stars And there's a local world that we know of at our level, which goes from the size of a big mountain down to the size of a molecule, where things seem to be permanent and solid. And that illusion of solidity happens only in this realm where we live, or in the size of a planet, say. But these forces that are used in my sculptures are tied off motion systems, really. And instead of being able to actually move, the forces are restricted, so that there's a reflection of how things work in a motion universe, in the stars or in atoms, in this small little spectrum that we know of as our physical world. So the only way we have to deal with things in this physical world are by analogy to a motion universe. And so in a sculpture such as Free Ride Home, these forces are locked off as a frozen event, as it were.